800-516-1025. Yesterday, we had some very interesting testimony in day one of the impeachment hearings in Washington, D.C. We heard from two senior State Department officials. And to find out more about what his take is on it, Jack Rice is joining us. He's our intelligence agency, international affairs, and State Department expert. And he's kind enough to join us right now to talk a little bit about yesterday's testimony. JackRice.net. JackRice.net is where you can find him. Hey, Jack.
Great to be with you again.
My pleasure to have you with us here, because I think it is very important for us to step back, because there is people, when the testimony was getting ready to begin, people were saying if the Republicans are just going to try to do character assassinations on these people, that it's going to backfire spectacularly, because this is not Democrat. It is not Republican. It is not the Congress. It's not the presidency. It's the State Department. These are seasoned international professionals, many of them wildly intelligent human beings that are found a purpose to serve the country, not for a political party, but to serve the country as the country.
Well, when you look at these two individuals in particular, you come to realize what it means to be not just impressive, but incredibly intelligent, incredibly experienced, and truly and honestly bipartisan. In particular, when you look at Ambassador Taylor, this was a West Point graduate. This was somebody who was 101st Airborne, 6 years in Vietnam, a combat soldier. He starts to work for the State Department under President Reagan and works for everybody, working his way up to Ambassador of Ukraine, and he's back in that very same role. And when people were pushing on him about quote-unquote being the star, his response was, this has nothing to do with that. My obligation here is to tell you what I understand and to tell you what I hear and to tell you what I think it means, but I'm not here to tell you what to do, because that's not my role. And in fact, I think in many ways he made many people in the room seem small in comparison to him, truly.
Oh, I agree with that statement 100%. I think that's an exceptional take on that. One of the things that's interesting, and I think a lot of people just don't seem to understand, is that regardless of the presidential administration, we don't just take Ireland. Let's just take Ireland, for example. We don't go into their ambassador. We might change out their ambassador, but what we don't do is we don't go clear out all of our staff that have been working with Ireland, because regardless of what happens with the president of the United States and elections in this country, Ireland is still Ireland, and we need experts on the ground that know Irish culture, politics, the system over there. That's what we're talking about. These State Department officials are there on the ground to basically give whoever the incoming ambassador is the knowledge, the experience, the intelligence they need to be able to maneuver the waters there.
Yeah, no question about it. What I particularly appreciated about both of them, again, Ambassador Taylor and George Kent as well, is that one of the things that they're working on, and I think this is really critical to this analysis, it's about why this matters. What is it that was going on in Ukraine, maybe in particular, but in general, the former parts of the Soviet Union that the United States cares so desperately about, and how this may have impacted that? Because I think the American people have to understand why it matters. And I don't care where you are politically. I just think that understanding the point, and I think George Kent was one of those who made it better than even the ambassador did. He's one of the senior State Department officials, but his area of expertise specifically is dealing with the former Soviet Union and something called the rule of law. And I know something about this. Luckily, my partner and I have worked all over the world ourselves teaching about what rule of law means and teaching lawyers, law students, and others on how it works. So we were in Russia, we were in Republic of Georgia, again, former Soviet Union, working on this very issue, and we were working with U.S. State Department officials on the very same thing. The point is this. One of the problems that has happened throughout the former Soviet Union, so we can think of Ukraine, we can think about Georgia, you can think of Armenia, Azerbaijan, and the list goes on, Kazakhstan and elsewhere, is that there's a lot of problems with corruption. And the reason is because they never had a system in place that worked in the way that we want it and we would like to see it work sort of on a worldwide stage. And it's much different than how it worked under the Soviet Union. And so the idea was setting up a system that actually works. In other words, you start with training police officers. And then what you do is you train a judiciary. You train your prosecutors. You make sure that the executive branch stays out of the judiciary branch and isn't in control of saying, we want you to prosecute these people in this kind of way, because that's what exacerbates corruption. And that's one of the things that George Kent talked about. So that's what they were doing in Ukraine, and they've been fighting this fight for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Republicans in particular were really driving the horses. They were running the train on this issue, arguing that this is what must be done in Ukraine and throughout the region. Mm-hmm. So when you get a president who comes in and says, hey, Ukraine, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the system that we helped you build and we've been spending hundreds of millions of dollars on every year to try to make sure it actually works. I want you to usurp that system, and I want you to do exactly the kinds of things that we're telling you not to do. So it literally undercuts the massive efforts of an enormous number of Americans who've been trying to do this now for almost 20 years, 30 years, to try to make a system work, and this is what causes corruption. One last point, the idea that was made by one of those in the hearings yesterday was that this wasn't just about eliminating corruption. It was actually about aiming corruption. It was about making a certain kind of thing happen, which is corrupt. And again, that is one of the huge problems that really hurts the United States on the worldwide stage and everything we've been trying to do for the last three decades over there.
Well, and it's very interesting you bring this up, because Ukraine's different than Turkmenistan and Kazakhstan. I mean, it is right on the doorstep of Europe. There's a lot of people in Europe that want Ukraine to stay away. You know, they don't want Russia taking it back over again. I remember the W administration, there was a lot of pressure from them to clean up corruption in that country for that exact reason, is that we can't really legitimize you unless you're legitimate. And so it was the W. Bush administration. It was the Obama administration. There was a lot of people, including the State Department personnel, who have been working for a long time to try to clean up Ukraine and get them to a point where there was no corruption. And now you just brought it up. I mean, Trump himself is trying to, let's go back to the corruption level.
Well, if we think about this rule of law idea, again, more broadly, the real purpose is this. You're trying to create a more stable government, a government where the people themselves actually buy and believe that their government is doing what is best for the people. So you create a stable regime, a stable government. That's why the United States has spent so much effort on this, because it creates a politically stable environment. It creates an economically stable environment. We want to sell to them, let's face it. But it's also about making sure that you have a system that works, because if you don't, you're going to have less likely possibilities of revolution. Mm-hmm. You're going to have less likely possibilities of being undercut by, and the Ukrainian problem is with the Russians. Because in particular, the Russians have always done this. Every time they have an opportunity and they see a weak spot, they grab it. They always move in. If you look at what happened with the Crimean question, this was exactly what the United States' concern has always been. And in fact, there's just a report that came out within about the last hour and a half that it's likely that the conversation that was had with President Trump and with Ambassador Sondland was actually tapped by the Russians themselves. The fear there is that if the Russians understand that what the Americans are doing is undercutting the Ukrainian regime itself, that's a soft spot. It's a weak spot, and that's exactly how the Russians exploit, because they're trying to take Crimea. They're trying to peel it away. And honestly, if they could do it, they'd peel essentially the eastern half of Ukraine away, trying to make the argument that they're Russian-speaking, that they're Russian Orthodox, and that they're historically Russian. They've been making this argument now for decades. Putin, in particular, has been making this argument for decades. And when the president steps in, the American president steps in and does this, what it actually does is encourage the Russians to actually take one or two or three or four steps further.
Ambassador Taylor, by the way, Jack Rice joining us, jackrice.net. Jack, the ambassador yesterday added to his story, his from his closed-door testimony, you brought up this conversation that happened in a restaurant. Not only do you have the one employee of the ambassador, one of the State Department official who heard the call, you have another report now of a second person also being at the table, hearing Trump very clearly and remembering Sondland's conversation with him. Now you're talking about the Russians probably have tapped into it. I'm going to guess multiple other countries. I mean, if we're this lax with this, because that's got to be part of this, is that I've never heard of a conversation like this taking place where they're just sitting in a restaurant, like a nice restaurant in Minneapolis, and all of a sudden you just take a call from the president of the United States and you start blabbing about an investigation on a political enemy that's supposed to be done by a foreign country. It's comical how bad it is, but it's also so terrifying because, as you pointed out, the reckless nature of this when it comes to who else is listening in.
Well, some people are trying to understand what the real relevance of this is. And honestly, I think it's earthquake level. Because if you look at what the defense of the president is right now and what the GOP has really been trying to argue, and I think this is going to be coming out, or at least they were intending this to come out over the next couple of weeks, is that the president was deeply concerned, and we've already heard some of this, the president is deeply concerned about corruption in Ukraine in general. And if we look at what happened with Joe and Hunter Biden, those are only simply examples of corruption. And so this president was trying to stop corruption in Ukraine, which included the Bidens, right? So that's the argument, the narrative that the GOP was really, really trying to hook their hat on. Because if you can make that argument and it sticks, what you're saying, can you really remove a president for trying to deal with a bunch of issues of corruption, including this one issue amongst many? And if you do that, that's probably enough to hide behind. The problem is this conversation between the president and Sondland, heard by at least two people, where Sondland then turns to these people and says, the president is more concerned about the Bidens than he is about Ukraine or anything else. What that highlights is that it's not about Ukraine, and it's not about corruption in general. It's about the Bidens in particular, and that's what makes it different.
And he asked, and we should throw in there, and he specifically said Rudy Giuliani, too.
Well, that's the other part. Unfortunately, one of the problems that we see regularly, and I saw this in my time at the Central Intelligence Agency too, is that you're going to get amateurs who think they can step in and do things when they don't even understand, because they don't have all the cards. They really don't get this. And when you actually start creating shadow foreign policy that steps in and undercuts the pros, what you're really doing is incredibly weakening the ability and the reach of the United States, because what happens then is that not only did the Ukrainians understand this, but the Russians certainly would have understood this too, and others, is that, well, who do you trust? Do you now simply ignore the State Department, not just in Ukraine, but everywhere else that they exist, looking for your own shadow foreign policy through the White House back door of Rudy Giuliani or somebody else? But also you doubt the ability of the U.S. to even make a decision that they won't turn around and flip on. And we talked about that in the past. But in the end, it's another example of sort of the hacking off of the strength and power of the United States to actually not only say they can do something, but actually stand up and do it, because now you don't even know.
We also should mention, you've got a little more experience with this. Aren't there supposed to be people on the U.S. side listening in on this conversation and, you know, saying, you know, okay, you probably shouldn't be having, I mean, it's Sondland clearly is a way, he doesn't understand any damn thing if he thinks that this is appropriate on his end. But aren't there people in the White House, in our intelligence agencies, that are supposed to be listening to this phone call? Or do you think this is one of those cases where Trump just grabbed his own cell phone and, you know, outside of the Chinese, the Russians, and anyone else who's hacking into that signal, that basically there's no one to babysit him to make sure he's not making a call to a restaurant that everyone can hear?
Well, there's going to be somebody who's involved in terms of the communication process. I mean, there's always been fights between presidents. Every president sort of wants to have the freedom to do what they want. But at the same time, there are secure lines that are supposed to be secure, but it depends upon where they are. And so if you're in a public space, it makes it much, much more difficult. And you think if somebody like an Ambassador Sondland who's in Kiev is in a public space, or whether he was in Poland in a public space, you think there aren't going to be intelligence services literally sitting, if not on at the table next to him, under the table where he sits? I mean, they're going to follow on purpose because they're trying to understand what this means. And so that is true. The problem that I think happens is that the more you get politicals rather than professionals actually making these major calls, again, if they don't have the experience and the years of experience and understanding, it's not even that they're good or bad people. It's that they're ignorant to many of the facts that really, really matter. And I think that's what made Ambassador Taylor and Senior State Department official George Kent so incredibly impressive yesterday, because what we watched was a pair of incredibly competent and experienced individuals who simply sat up and said, we have been doing this for the last six presidents, and we're simply going to tell you what we know, and we're going to tell you what we think it means. That made me proud. Mm-hmm. It made me proud to see that, because those people exist in this country, and they've existed in the Beltway for decades and decades. They're unsung frequently, but those are the people that frequently run this country, and we should be thankful that they are.
And it should be reiterated, and I think this is, to a point, should be a comfort prior to the Trump administration, is that regardless of president, regardless of political party, When Taylor and Kent are up there and saying, you know, we've never seen this before. We've never seen a president or an administration basically start dangling aid in front of countries for personal political dirt on political opponents. We've never seen this. This is why they're there. That needs to be reiterated, that this is not something that's normal. This is not something that's done. And for the fact that these senior State Department officials are coming forward, that this is the reason why they are coming forward, is because this was completely crossing a line for them that goes way beyond politics, and it goes to the you know, saving the foundation of the United States.
The power of the United States, mm-hmm. the power of American foreign policy is that there's a continuity to it. And that when I swore an oath, I didn't swear an oath to the president that I was serving at the time and then had to be taken back to the basement at the Central Intelligence Agency. So I swore an oath to George Bush. And then I had to swear another oath to Bill Clinton, because now I'm representing and standing behind Bill Clinton. I'm not. I never was. I wasn't standing behind either of them. And neither were these people. And in fact, I think what we do have to remember is that it is about the continuity of the United States. That's how the U.S. actually retains its power, because when we say something, we mean it. And more importantly, we mean it beyond just this president. It's the next president. So if we're going to say something, it actually is going to matter, because if not, here's what happens. You end up getting an adversary who simply sits back and says, yeah, whatever, I know it's going to happen in 4 years. We're going to swing back another direction, and we're going to flip everything on its head. If you look at American foreign policy, generally speaking, it's been relatively consistent over the last 70 years. I can show you a lot of things done domestically that were very, very different, but internationally, how things were handled in Central and South America and Southeast Asia and across all of Asia itself, it was very consistent, even under the likes of a Jimmy Carter and a Ronald Reagan. They were really quite consistent. There were tweaks, but generally it was done in a similar fashion, because we understood what that meant. And that's something that I think is critical to continue. This idea of deciding that this president should somehow act differently is going to create an earthquake sort of through the system, and I don't mean in a good way.
And whether or not we can get back to that level of stability that we've had under so many different presidents before remains to be seen. Jack Rice, once again, jackrice.net. Jack, excellent as always. We'll spotlight this interview. I really appreciate the time, my friend.
Always. Thank you.
Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.